Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the outside world is a dangerous place for kids, but they may not always be safe at home either. Do you know what dangers may be hiding in plain sight? Also this morning, now that it's starting to feel more like fall, this is the time to start thinking about getting your annual flu and COVID vaccinations. And the U.S. Army has a vested interest in making sure today's students are being all they can be. And their recently developed Future Soldier Preparatory course is based on principles that can help any young person succeed, regardless of their future plans. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, September 26th, 2024. So, how about this? Ohio's capital city is being named the best in the country for commuters. I always like to see, you know, what Ohio stories are making headlines on the newswire. And the ride-sharing company Lyft compared 35 U.S. cities with populations of more than 500,000 people and compiled a list across the categories of average commute time, vehicle speed and traffic congestion, fuel and parking costs, public transit options, and then there were some other metrics as well. But those are the primary metrics for this to find the best cities for commuters. And Columbus, Ohio took the top overall spot. El Paso, Texas was number two, and then Las Vegas, Nevada, which I thought was kind of interesting. But the capital city of the Buckeye State, number one best city in the country for commuters. And I thought clearly those people are not driving US 23 through Delaware. That's vehicle speed and traffic congestion is one of the metrics. Clearly, that's not a part of the Columbus area that they took into account. You know what I mean? Anyway. They're going to work on that. They're going to fix it. They're going to make it all better. But that is pretty cool. Let's see what else is going on. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, you know how every day there is a disaster story or something we should be concerned about, fearful of, a doom and gloom story every day in the news. Some sort of doom and gloom story, and here is today's. New research finds more than a third of children worldwide, more than a third, are nearsighted. And those numbers are expected to grow. Our kids can't see. They say nearsightedness has been on the rise from 24% in 1990 to nearly 36% in 2023. And it is particularly on the rise in Southeast Asian nations. Kind of interesting. Japan is at the top of the list. 86% of children are reportedly nearsighted in Japan. Researchers are blaming our devices. They're blaming technology. They say children should spend more time engaged in physical activity and less time looking at their screens. Findings published this week in the British Journal of Ophthalmology. So get your kids away from their screens. Put the phones away. Log off the computer because it's driving them to nearsightedness, apparently. That is the doom and gloom story. Our kids cannot see. Here's another interesting report just published in, I don't know which journal. It's another medical journal, and I'm not sure which one it is. But this newly published report says that there is likely a link between COVID and diabetes. My first thought is, how in the world are we just now learning about this? COVID's been around for 4 years now, but it just goes to show that we are constantly learning new things about this relatively new virus. It suggests that COVID is creating inflammation in the pancreas, Dr. Peter Hotez, infectious disease expert at Baylor University, says this study comes as a growing number of parents question the impact COVID will have on kids, and they are not getting them vaccinated. Dr. Hotez says he is hopeful that this new report will change that. And I saw something the other day. Let me see if I can find this item. It was in the stack of stuff here. Not just COVID vaccinations that parents aren't getting for their kids. Federal officials are warning that a drop in vaccinations in the U.S. may have maybe leading to an increase in flu deaths among children. CDC said last week that nearly 200 kids died from influenza-related illnesses during the most recent flu season, and that most of the children who died were eligible for a vaccine but did not receive one. Said the deaths coincide with overall drops in vaccinations among children for all conditions, all diseases. As of May, the CDC said only 53% of children in the U.S. were vaccinated for the flu this season, which is down even from the previous year when they saw an alarming number of deaths, flu-related deaths in children. So, and now, here is this with respect to COVID and perhaps diabetes. So, kind of interesting. We are constantly learning more about this disease. Couple of other items here among the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This is kind of cool. A 400-year-old oak tree in the Santa Clarita Valley in California now has historical landmark status in Los Angeles County. The LA County Board of Supervisors made the designation official on Tuesday of this week. The tree is nicknamed Old Glory, and it lives on the edge of Pico Canyon Park. And this is the same tree. I don't know if you remember this. This might be kind of an obscure reference, but it's the same tree that environmental activist John Quigley sat in about 20 years ago. He had a sit-in to save this tree from getting knocked down to make room for a development project in Newhall Ranch. What came out of that is that they then moved the tree. They dug it up and moved it, transplanted it about a quarter of a mile away to the park, Pico Canyon Park. And it's 400 years old, and it is the largest tree in the U.S. to survive being relocated. So that's kind of cool. It's now designated a historical landmark. 400-year-old oak tree. I don't know, I mean, if that's a tourist attraction or anything, but if you happen to be vacationing in the LA area, well, there you go. I might stop by Pico Canyon Park to see that tree. 400-year-old oak tree. That is pretty cool. And lastly here, among the first things that you need to know, a story to ponder as you are getting up and heading to work this morning. A new research team from Nokia Bell Labs has compiled a list of the jobs that are most and least likely to be impacted by artificial intelligence. The jobs that are most and least likely to be impacted by AI. For this study, they analyzed over 24,000 AI-related patents that have been filed in the past decade or so. And using that, they created an artificial intelligence impact score for various professions. So, what do you want first? The highest, the jobs most likely to be impacted, or the least most likely? Okay, we're going to start with the most likely. The jobs most likely to be impacted by artificial intelligence. Here they are. Cardiovascular technologists, sound engineering technicians, and nuclear medicine technologists. They have the highest levels of AI vulnerability. All right. On the other end of the spectrum, those jobs least likely to be impacted by AI: pile driver operators, dredge operators, and aircraft cargo handling supervisors, the least vulnerable to AI innovations. So I read this and I say to myself, here is another example of why trade work is maybe a more attractive option for a growing number of young people today, like the skilled and even unskilled trades. I mean, I'm not sure that we would call an aircraft cargo handling supervisor a particularly highly skilled trade. But by the way, the one caveat here is that the study only analyzed U.S. patent data, so global innovations were not taken into consideration. But those, they say, are the jobs in the U.S. most and least likely to be impacted by the prevalence of artificial intelligence. So there you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchak. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly sunny today, a high in the mid-70s, mostly cloudy tonight, a low around 60. Raise the Bar Hancock County will be holding its inaugural Career Connections Day at Owens Community College in Findlay. Raise the Bar Director Trisha Valesk says more than 800 Hancock County 8th graders will have a chance to meet with dozens of area employers.
It allows us to give younger kids the chance to, for the first time, connect their career assessment results to a career fair so they go and meet the employers that align with where their aptitudes and interests are for right now. They're young, but giving them that sense of like building connections early.
Trisha was on with WFIN's Chris Oakes to discuss the Career Connections Day. Listen back to that full interview and the story on our website. Some comments Republican U.S. Senate candidate Bernie Moreno made at a town hall in Ohio have caught the attention of many.
It's the video that's leading to national criticism of GOP Senate hopeful Bernie Moreno. Speaking at a town hall in Warren County, he questioned why suburban women would be singularly focused on abortion.
Okay, a little crazy, by the way, but especially for women that are like past 50, I think that's an issue for you.
Former GOP presidential candidate Nikki Haley posted on X, "Are you trying to lose the election?" asking for a friend.
ONN's Lena Lai reporting. An upcoming event in Findlay will bridge prospective foster families with essential resources and advocates to help them get started on their journey to foster care. The event called Open Hearts, Open Home will take place on Saturday, October 12th at the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts. Randall Galbraith, director of Hancock County Job and Family Services, says the state of Ohio and Hancock County in particular is experiencing a shortfall in the number of foster homes available to care for children in the custody of public children's service agencies. And he says the shortfall has led to a crisis in placing children into loving homes. Get more details about the upcoming foster family event in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Well, as we all know, the world can be a dangerous place, and even though we'd like to think of our homes as somewhere our kids can always be safe, that may not always be true. Do you know where those potential dangers may be in your home? Nancy Coles is the executive director of Kids in Danger. They are a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting children by fighting for product safety. And Nancy, what are some of the key things that we should be thinking about when we are shopping for new products to ensure as best we can that we are safe in our homes?
Yeah, that's a great question. As you mentioned, in fact, young children are most often injured at home, partly because that's where they spend so much time, but also because there can be hidden hazards. And one of the ones, you know, to talk about is furniture tip over. So about once a month, a child is actually killed when a dresser or a large piece of furniture tips over on them. This can happen when the child's trying to pull out drawers, trying to maybe get dressed themselves and pull clothes from the back, or even climbing on the dresser for whatever reason. And so there has been a lot of work done in this area to make sure that dressers are safer and less likely to tip over on a small child.
And you say there are actually new government standards and rules that pertain to this?
That's right. There has always been a voluntary industry standard for furniture that tests a few things, they hang a 50-pound weight on it and stuff. But one, they were voluntary, so companies that didn't want to didn't have to meet them. And secondly, it really wasn't indicative of the kind of real-world use that might cause a tip-over. So in 2022, Congress passed the Sturdy Act, because we do want the dressers in our homes to be sturdy and not tip over under the weight of a child. That act required a new standard be developed both with manufacturers, industry, consumer groups like mine, and the government. The Consumer Product Safety Commission is the government agency that oversees product safety. A lot of work went into that, a lot of time, and now the new standard went into effect in September 2023. So dressers made after that point are not going to be as likely to tip over on a young child. They're going to be much sturdier, and they're also going to come with an anchoring device to make sure that you can attach it to the wall and don't have to worry about that product tipping over.
As you mentioned, household furniture being actually one of the most common sources of dangers in the home. So how do these, and like you said, this has been a rule, this rule that you mentioned actually is passed last year. So this should really be in effect for anything that is on the market right now, right?
Well, you would think so. In some cases, that would be the case. Anything manufactured after September 1st, 2023 that's in the stores has to meet this standard. So if you look for that manufacture date or ask the clerk in the store to maybe look and find it for you. But there's a long timeline with furniture, as we know. So some retailers may still be carrying some of the older units, but we would encourage people to make sure they check, because there's no sense in buying something new now that is already outdated because it doesn't meet the new standard.
Yeah, that's I was going to ask, is any advice, how can we tell, how can we make sure that the furniture that we are buying meets this new standard?
Yes. So as I said, if it is manufactured after that date, it's the law. So retailers are checking that they see that the product meets the new standard. If it's made before that, it could meet the new standard. You would have to get that information either from the manufacturer or the retailer where you're purchasing the product. If you can't get a satisfactory answer, then maybe skip that piece of furniture and look for one where you can find the date.
Yeah. This actually brings to mind kind of a larger issue, because these days, given the volume of products that we are importing from other countries that sometimes have lax standards, I'm talking to you, China, is our government responding quickly enough to react to these, respond to these changes in the marketplace, the way people are buying things, to keep up with all of this influx of potentially dangerous products?
Well, you know, any furniture, any products really sold in the U.S. have to meet U.S. standards. It doesn't matter where they're made. It is a big task, though, for government to do that, at check at the ports, and the proliferation, really, of online sales through different platforms and things has made it much more complicated. That's one of the issues kids and other organizations are looking at, to see if we can close any of those loopholes there to make sure they're safe. But I think if you're looking at furniture in a retail store, you can be sure that it was made, if it was made after that date, that it's going to meet the standard.
Yeah. The other thing that I also want to ask you about, because your organization, Kids in Danger, advocates for greater safety standards with respect to all products, not just furniture. You actually have a section of your website dedicated to secondhand products. That has become a huge thing these days, as new products become more expensive, household budgets get squeezed more and more. Obviously, people need to take extra care when buying previously used items.
That's right. You need to think before you buy secondhand. We, you know, frankly, something is secondhand as soon as you bring it home, right, and use it for a few days. It's a used product. So we don't discourage it at all, but we do ask consumers to be smart about what they do. First, check to see if it's been recalled. There are dozens, over 100 children's products recalled every year. You may not hear of all of them. So first check the products in your own home, but definitely if you're looking either on a secondhand marketplace online or even your local garage sale, go on your phone, go to cpsc.gov, that's the Consumer Product Safety Commission, to their recalls page, and you can search to make sure the product hasn't been recalled. And if it hasn't been recalled, check how old it is. If it's over, you know, a certain period of time, it probably doesn't meet the current standards, especially when you're talking about nursery products like strollers, high chairs, things like that. And there's a few products you should never buy used, like car seats. I think most people don't realize if a car seat has been involved in an accident, even if it wasn't apparently damaged anyway, it will not protect a child again. They're really one use if you count an accident as the one use product. So if your car seat has been in an accident, that's why we don't recommend you buy secondhand, because you'd have no way to know that.
Yeah. Yeah. With respect to paying attention to recalls, again, going back to what we were saying, there's so many products that are coming in. And as you point out, it's hard to keep up with all of those. So that's why we have those product recalls. Anything that you buy, always have to be on the lookout for those and be aware of the latest recalls. Really good stuff with respect to the new standards, the latest standards, and being aware of the dangers that may be in your home. Nancy Coles is Executive Director of Kids in Danger. You have a lot more information on your website as well, correct?
That's right. Kidsindanger.org. You can not only get new information, we also monthly put out what we call the Recall Digest, pictures of all the children's products that have been recalled that month. So you can check quickly to make sure you don't have them.
Nancy, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, you remember we were mentioning, I don't remember whether it was yesterday or a few days ago, the good news, the number of new COVID cases in Ohio was down last week as compared to the week before and the week before that. Certainly good news for the here and now, but remember, we're just at the beginning of a long cold and flu and COVID season. We're playing the long game here, and of course, the best way to protect yourself is with those annual vaccines. Joining us this morning is Courtney Lowry from CVS Pharmacy. And Courtney, when does flu season typically begin? I know it can happen anytime. You can get a cold or the flu or whatever. But what is the season that we typically think about really begin?
Yeah, so that's a great question. The CDC, says that unfortunately there is not a specific start date that they can narrow down. It can vary year to year and depend on different parts of the country. But what we know is that it peaks between December and February, and it can continue into May. So right now we're in early fall. This is the best time to protect yourself so that when that peak does come, you're prepared and ready to go.
Are there any forecasts this year that it's going to be a bad season, or a mild season, or is it just too soon to tell?
Right now, it's too soon to tell. The CDC has been monitoring the activity, looking at, you know, our neighbors in the Southern Hemisphere, and no clear trends have emerged just yet. But I'm sure as the weeks go on, we will start to see that information and, you know, be able to share a little bit more. But right now, we're nothing to report.
Okay, so let's talk about, you know, because again, we're just getting into the earliest part of this. Why is now the best time to get a flu shot? If it's not going to peak, if it's not going to be really bad until later, should I wait until later? If I get it now, is it going to wear off by then?
So it won't wear off. If you get it now, you are protected for the entire season. But the reason that we recommend getting it early is because it does take your body 2 weeks to generate an appropriate response. So you have to build up that immunity to the flu. So we could have an off year and it could peak, you know, mid-October. And if you wait until mid-October to get it, then you're a little too late.
Yeah, so. good point. Because again, this is something of an inexact science. We can look at history and we can make these projections, but it really could, as we were saying, happen anytime. So who should and should not get a flu shot?
So anyone over the age of 6 months, it is recommended that they receive a flu shot. We definitely want to make sure we're paying special attention to our vulnerable populations. So that would be anyone over the age of 65, our pregnant population, as well as those who are immunocompromised due to certain medical conditions. And then we want to make sure we're protecting children, especially under the age of 5. Now, in very rare instances, we don't recommend the flu shot. So that would be anyone who is less than 6 months old, anyone who has had an allergy to any component of the flu shot in the past, and anyone who has had a past allergic reaction. So those patients, we recommend you speak to your pharmacy or your healthcare professional and identify if you're eligible and what product is right for you.
So there are alternatives perhaps on the market that would provide some measure of protection if you can't get the shot for one of those reasons.
So it depends. There's the standard dose, which is what the general population will receive. And then there's the dose for patients over 65. It's formulated a little differently to give them extra protection. And okay. Then in the past, there's been concern around egg. So the CDC has changed their stance on that, and we do still have a product that is egg-free, but they no longer say that if you have an egg allergy, you shouldn't get the vaccine. Okay. So those are the different products available.
All right. What about cost? What are we talking about in terms of cost? Because I know that's always a concern for some folks.
Yeah, it's always top of mind. So through most insurance plans, it's a $0 copay. It's covered fully, including Medicare Part B, Medicaid plans, as well as commercial plans. There are off chances where it's not covered or you don't have insurance. So those patients, we do offer an out-of-pocket option, but generally $0.
So, and does that extend to the COVID-19 vaccine as well? Because again, we're not just talking about cold and flu, we're talking about COVID season as well. Does insurance cover the cost of the COVID vaccine or the COVID boosters?
Yes, we're seeing very similar trends to the flu shot. So generally $0, but again, can be that one-off situation. You can check with your pharmacy or your insurance company. They can tell you for sure.
And you can get both of those at the same time, correct?
You can, and we encourage it, especially you're going in there, you're rolling up your sleeves once, you might as well just get both. The seasons, as you mentioned, are kind of starting to overlap. So this would be the best time to protect yourself, and it's perfectly safe and effective.
And while we're on the subject, are there any other vaccinations that one should consider when you're getting your flu and or your COVID shot?
Yeah, at CVS, we offer 15 plus vaccines in addition to flu. But what we're seeing is most commonly COVID-19 is what they'll pair it with. Others are opting to get the RSV vaccine. It is safe to get up to 3 vaccines at the same time. But others too are also looking at maybe Shingrix as well. So definitely can get multiple at the same time, safe, effective. You just want to check with your pharmacist before you jump in.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up RSV. That's another one. And again, we remember last year that was a significant concern as well. So something else to consider, especially at this time of the year. And it's easy to see because, you know, we're spending more time indoors around more people or not getting this is what generally tends to make this sort of a big time for these types of conditions.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we're seeing that overlap and those rising cases. So now is best time. And like I said, you can get all 3 at the same time if you choose.
And again, now is a good time to get on this before it gets real, real busy. And we never know exactly when it's going to peak. Do folks need to schedule a time to get these shots?
It's entirely up to the patient. Convenience is the name of the game. So if you prefer to make an appointment, you can do so for yourself and your family members. Or if you want to do it on a whim, you're driving by during your lunch break, you can stop in and we do accommodate walk-ins as long as the pharmacy's open. So either or, whichever works for you.
All right. Again, Courtney Lowry is with us from CVS Pharmacy talking about that time of year. We're thinking cold and flu and COVID season, RSV, as we were saying. As the time start thinking about this, preparing for it. Where do we get more information, Courtney?
So if you want more information about anything we talked about today, CVS.com is the best place. You can also download the CVS app, or you can stop into the pharmacy or call the pharmacy, and any pharmacist can give you the same information that we discussed today.
Courtney, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you. Have a good day.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Boy, we have a good collection of broken news this morning. You remember the story, and this has been now at least a couple of months ago, I think, about the Willy Wonka themed event that was held that turned out to be like a big fat lot of nothing. You remember when that was, you know, people spent all of this money to have this enchanted Willy Wonka themed event and it turned out to be at a warehouse with a couple of inflatables and, you know, it was really, you know, it was really nothing. Well, a similar event recently happened in Detroit where fans of the hit show Bridgerton paid, in some cases, $300 or more to attend a grand ball that promised elegance and entertainment in the period theme, the Bridgerton era. But again, here again, the event did not deliver the high society experience that was promised. Rachel Eaton tells local news reporters in Detroit that dolled up participants, I mean, they dressed elegantly in those grand ball outfits and everything, thinking this was going to be a Bridgerton. Anyway, they were left sitting on the floor, bored, with nothing to do. There was a lone violin player and a pole dancer providing entertainment. she said, quote, "I don't remember this in Bridgerton." The event was reportedly hosted by a management company called Uncle and Me LLC. Uncle and Me LLC, which sounds like a fine, upstanding company. And they say in a statement, "We were saddened to hear that people were disappointed." The experience. A pole dancer and a single violin player. Well, it was a unique experience, to be sure. Elsewhere in the broken news, this is school picture season, right? Before too long, kids have their school pictures taken and all of that. Oh, it's such a special day for kids in schools. A photographer at Chittum Elementary in Chesapeake, Virginia, had to be escorted off the school campus for allegedly asking to eat a child's soul. Wait, what? He said he wanted to eat a child's soul, the school photographer. Parents said the photographer, one parent said the photographer made her son cry while he was getting his school photo taken. She said, "I don't know whether he was joking, trying to be funny, but this was not funny." Said he wanted to eat a child's soul. The school sent out an email notifying parents of the situation, but did not name the photographer. Life Touch, who apparently employed this now unemployed photographer, has launched an internal investigation. To eat a child's soul. All right, then. This is rather unusual. A woman in Madison, Wisconsin is under arrest, accused of breaking into a home and cooking herself a shrimp and pasta dinner. The real resident of the home called police just before 11 p.m. earlier this week, saying that she was startled when she saw someone walking around inside her house. Someone she didn't know was just wandering around inside of her house. The suspect, identified as one Joanna Lee, answered the door when officers knocked and claimed to have permission to be in the house, but she did not. The homeowner says she has never met Ms. Lee before. The suspect is under arrest for burglary, was booked into the Dane County Jail. Doesn't say whether she ever got her shrimp and pasta dinner that she cooked. I would think that the homeowner should get to eat the food. I mean, you know, if nothing else, for the inconvenience, compensation for the inconvenience. Maybe you wouldn't want to. I don't know what's in that. Speaking of unusual crimes, two men in Reedley, California, are facing charges for allegedly stealing almost 500 pounds of grapes. 500 pounds of grapes. Police pulled over a truck in Kingsburg, which had a large amount of unpackaged grapes in the bed of the truck. Police soon discovered the grapes had been stolen from a nearby vineyard the night before. That just seems like a very, I get it, you know, it's wine country and all of that, but it still seems like an unusual thing to steal, you know? How are you going to offload a bunch of hot grapes? I don't. Two men were arrested and charged with felonies because the grapes were of the Tico variety, worth about $700 in total. So it is a felony. The grapes had to be destroyed because they were harvested prematurely and improperly packaged. So that's very sad. That's very sad. And lastly here in the broken news this morning, it would be bad enough for the Los Angeles Police Department to allegedly raid the wrong business. It was a drug raid. They were going after a business, but they raided the wrong place. That would be bad enough. But the failed operation took an even more unusual turn when one of the officers learned that guns and MRI machines don't mix. So I'm not sure what business they were trying to raid, but they ended up breaking into a medical office, and it was a medical office with an MRI machine. Now, MRI stands for magnetic resonance imaging, emphasis on the words on the word magnetic. The force of the machine's magnetism was so strong that it sucked the cop's rifle, which had been dangling in his right hand with an unsecured strap. It sucked the rifle out of his hand and became attached to the machine. An officer then allegedly activated an emergency shutoff button on the machine. And during this whole thing, this is a really expensive, we were talking tens, maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars for an MRI machine that got damaged in the process. The medical office's the medical office has now filed a lawsuit against the LAPD. The officer reportedly grabbed his rifle and left, leaving behind a magazine filled with bullets on the office floor, according to the lawsuit. The owners of the diagnostic center are suing the LAPD for an unspecified amount in damages for allegedly violating their rights and damaging their MRI machine. That must have been quite a sight. They break into the medical office and suddenly the cop's rifle gets sucked onto the MRI machine. I can say, is there video of this, security video somewhere? Because I would like to see that. That must have been rather comical. But they're not laughing. There you go. That is today's broken news report. If nothing else, it's very embarrassing. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Celebrate our local German heritage at the 10th Annual Oktoberfest Findlay, presented by Premier Bank downtown on Saturday, September 28th from 2 to 10:30 p.m. Enjoy traditional polka music, a kids' zone, delicious food, adult contests, and a variety of German, craft, and domestic brews. Admission is $5 for 21 and up, $3 for under 21, cash only. It's the largest street festival in the area on September 28th. Visit OktoberfestFindlay.com for details. This message provided by WFIN.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. You might have heard about this. It made headlines, I guess, about a week ago, maybe not quite that long ago, but within the past few days, this recent study out of China, scientists have found that dogs and humans will sync up, our brains will sync up when we gaze into the eyes of our pet. You look into your dog's eyes and they're looking into your eyes, and our brains are actually syncing up. Now, they have long known about this phenomena when two dogs sync up with each other that way, and it's been observed in humans as well. But this is the first time that they have been able to document this brain sync between dogs and humans. And the longer we do it, the more often we do it, the deeper that brain sink becomes. Now, the purpose of the research that was done, they say it could possibly help those who are on the autism spectrum, which would be pretty cool. But I think that this is just another demonstration of the incredible bond that humans have with our pets. And a new survey of 2,000 dog owners finds 80% say they felt an immediate connection with their pup. 80% felt that immediate connection, compared to 69% who said that they felt that same way about their significant other. We are more likely, far more likely, to have that immediate connection with our dog than our partner, as it turns out. Beyond that, people were more likely to believe in love at first sight when it came to animals than with people. In fact, 20% in the survey questioned whether or not they should adopt their pet because the connection was not instant. They didn't have that instant connection. They didn't know whether they should adopt that pet. Now, 19% did say that it took time to build a bond with their dog, that it didn't happen instantly. So all hope is not lost. But a little bit further on down in the survey, which I thought was kind of interesting here, 76% of those in the survey, dog owners in the survey, say that food is their love language with their dog. This is how we share the love with our dog, is through what we feed them. 76%. And 53% of dog owners in the survey admitted to feeding their dogs better than they feed themselves. let there be no doubt about just how much we love our pets. We're feeding them better than we are feeding ourselves, and more likely to have that love at first sight feeling with our dogs than our significant other. I'm not sure what that says, whether that says more about our connection with our pets or if it really is telling about the lack of connection that we have with our partner, if you really think about it. Well, this is kind of a back-to-school conversation with a bit of a twist. The U.S. Army, obviously, has a vested interest in making sure that today's students and potentially tomorrow's soldiers are being all they can be, to borrow a familiar phrase, both physically and academically. And to that end, they have developed within the past couple of years something called the Future Soldier Preparatory Course, where soldier instructors help young people reach the standards necessary to join the military. And joining us this morning to explain how these same principles can help all students in the U.S. is U.S. Army Soldier First Sergeant Eric Immel. Sergeant, what is the Future Soldier Preparatory Course? Explain.
Well, good morning to you. The Future Soldier Prep Course is a program designed to educate and train future soldiers to overcome either academic or physical fitness barriers that may preclude them from Army service. And then within that preparatory course, there's two distinct tracks. We have the fitness program, which ensures that recruits meet the Army's enlisted body fat composition standards. And the educational program is for recruits who need assistance improving their ASVAB scores. And the ASVAB is just your standardized placement test to open opportunities to enlist into the Army.
And from your experience through this program, what are some of the challenges that are holding youth back from achieving their goals? Again, whether we're talking physically or academically, and explain how this helps address those challenges. This course helps address those challenges.
So We'll start academically. We have a lot of the focus that we place here is on test-taking skills. So we teach trainees how to deal with the stress of taking the test, but also prepare them with improving word knowledge, their reading comprehension, arithmetic reasoning. And then we have our teachers and drill sergeants teach in a classroom setting, but we also offer tutoring for subjects that trainees maybe, you know, face or have a little harder time grasping. So we do a pre-assessment that allows them to figure out what areas they need to focus on, and then we kind of tailor our approach to whatever's necessary to improve their skill set. Mm. And then in the physical fitness arena or the fitness program, we offer the Army's holistic health and fitness approach. And we focus on physical readiness training, the mental aspects of physical readiness, as well as nutrition. So there's a lot of counseling classes from the drill sergeants that teach trainees, you know, what to eat, how to fuel yourself properly to be mentally and physically fit, and then generally build a foundation for an overall healthier approach to life.
Now, as we mentioned, this is a relatively new program. So what kind of response? I think just within the past couple of years, 2022, I think, is when this was launched, if memory serves. So what kind of response have you seen in these first couple of years?
So since the program's launch, we've had over 26,000 recruits that have graduated the Future Soldier Prep Force, and they have moved on to complete basic combat training and become soldiers. And then if you break it down a little further, in the academic skills portion of it, we have about a 95% success rate of students improving at least one test category, which means that it opens up different job possibilities. On the fitness side, we have about an 87% graduation rate of students within the first 3 weeks, and then that allows them to move on to basic combat training. So it's a very successful program that brings trainees to meet the Army standard.
Impressive indeed. And obviously the goal is to, as we said, prepare the soldiers of tomorrow. But I would imagine, I mean, this could be valuable for really any and every student, whether or not there is a military career in their future. So what tips and advice can you offer to all young people to help them succeed as we get into the heart of this new school year?
Yeah, so I think one of the big things is setting goals, right? So long-term goals and then short-term goals within those to make the longer-term goal achievable. So you meet those milestones as you move along. But also, I would say, you know, take a break, get out from behind your electronics, go outside. You know, try to go for a walk or a run and really increase your physical fitness level, which will help with your mental health and you know, overall employ a healthier, holistic approach to life, you know, before you join the Army or even just in the school year in general.
You know, I think that's a really good piece of advice, not just for students, but for all of us, myself included, probably. U.S. Army Soldier First Sergeant Eric Immel with us this morning talking about the Future Soldier Preparatory Course. Where do folks get more information?
So if you're interested about life in the Army or to learn to be all you can be, you can visit goarmy.com.
Sergeant, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, two great authors talk about a pair of fantastic books. CBS sports writer John Talty on The Price, What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos. And the one and only Bill O'Reilly discusses the first title in his latest series. It's called Confronting the Presidents. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.